I'm always saying, try to get in that really perfect place where you care about the outcome, you want to do your best for the outcome, but you have a priority list in your head of what really matters.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 264, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, just a quick reminder before we start today's episode, since there is not an official sponsor today, that I'm kind of, I guess, sponsoring the show. And one of the things that I do offer, provide, and I think I'm halfway decent at, is coaching services. So, you know, whatever your running goals are, whatever you're working towards, if you're not maybe happy with the progress you're making, would like to maybe take some of the burden of figuring out what to do off of your plate and just focus on actually doing the workouts, let's talk. Let's talk. I would encourage you to head over to the coaching page on my website, which you can find at dizruns.com/coaching, and you kind of get a feel for what my take on coaching is. You know, in case you haven't figured out my personality and kind of my style yet from listening to the show, you can get a feel of it there, kind of hear a little bit about what my thoughts are, and obviously also see what different levels are available, because I don't believe in a one-size-fits-all anything. And I also, you know, that applies to styles of coaching, levels of coaching, things like that as well. So head over to the website, check it out. If you have any questions, let me know. You know, I take on new clients about once every month or so. So if you're interested, you know, get yourself on the waiting list and I'll be sure to let you know. Or obviously you can also just kind of pay attention, check your emails, things like that, of the things that I send out. And you'll know when the coaching doors are open, and would love to be able to work with you if that's something that you're interested in. So dizruns.com/coaching. And now let's go ahead and get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, when I was thinking about doing a month of follow-up chats with folks that have been on the show in the past, I asked the Facebook group who they thought would be or what they thought of the idea and who they would want to have back on the show. Needless to say, they liked the idea in general, and the most popular choice for a second go-round was none other than Mr. Tom Foreman. When we chatted back in episode 173, which, gosh, who knew it had been that long ago, Tom had recently published his book, which was titled My Year of Running Dangerously. We talked a lot about the book, why he wrote it, and how he found his way back to running, which was, talked about a lot in the book as well, after several years away from the sport. So I'm excited to get back in touch with Tom and be able to catch up a little bit and see what running looks like for him now, a couple years later after our original chat. So without any further ado, it is my pleasure to welcome Tom Foreman back to the show. Thanks for coming back and joining us again, Tom.
Oh, man, it's great to be back. And, you know, I didn't realize how long it had been either. But, you know, I guess it's kind of like when you start a program of training or something, and all of a sudden you look back and realize you've been doing it for, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, and you're like, wow, it doesn't seem that long now. It seemed a long time in front of me, but in retrospect, it seems to have moved along. But it's good to be back.
Yeah, yeah, glad to have you. And guys, if you haven't connected with Tom on the social medias, he's the same handle all over the place, and it's at Tom Foreman CNN. So TomForeManCNN. And, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the places. And if you want to check out the original episode, it's episode 173, like I mentioned. And if you're trying to find it on your app on your phone, you probably can't find it, because most of them cut us off after about, you know, 250 or 300 episodes. But it did run as a best of episode, and that one was episode 281. So you can find that one still on most of your phone apps. If you missed the first conversation, I would definitely encourage you to go back and listen to it. It was a fun one. I listened to it again leading up to today. So it was a good refresher for me, and it's something that is certainly timeless, something you'll enjoy no matter when it is. And the links for today's episode, the show notes, all that good stuff, is dizruns.com/464. If you want to track those down and connect with Tom or find the links to the old show, whatever the case might be, that's where they are, 464 for this episode. So, Tom, the way we always, you know, I mean, you were here before, you know how it starts out with the simple question. And last time your answer was kind of unique. So I'm going to ask the same question again and see if the answer's changed, if it's still the same or what it is. And that'll just give us a good place to start. But that's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
You know, the first time I answered with just any unusual distance, because it makes every race feel new and different. And I think that's still largely true. Through my heavier training of the past few years, I've grown very fond of half marathons, mm-hmm. because you know, they're short enough. They're long enough to be interesting and short enough to just be fun. Mm-hmm. You can even have a bad day on a half marathon in many cases, and you can go through if you're a marathoner and it's not that bad. And if you have a good day, you know, it's a blast. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, I've been focused. This is the first year, really, since my return to running, where my focus has been entirely on trying to turn out a good marathon. So I don't know that the marathon is my favorite distance because it's such a challenge, right? Because it's really a challenge. But this year it's my favorite because it needs to be, and I want it to be this year. And I've been trying to have as many positive thoughts as I could about the marathon distance.
Gotcha. Why, the most obvious follow-up question in the history of podcasts, why are you deciding to focus on the marathon this year?
Because I'm in my mid to late 50s. And I would like to qualify for Boston. I've never been fast enough. Mm. It's funny because a lot of people think that I would have run Boston at some point. And I've made the really fundamental mistake that any runner might make in that I train for everything at once. I go out and I try to run a good 5K, and then I try to run a good half, and then I try to run a good marathon, and then I try to run a good 50 miler. And you can't really mix those up if you want to do particularly well at any one of them. Mm-hmm. I've done reasonably well at all of them, and I have achieved my fundamental goal, which is to have fun running. And I've really enjoyed mixing it up that way. But I reached a point where I said, you know, I would really like to be fast while I still have a few years where I might be fast. And there's no simpler test of speed at long distance than to Boston qualify. So this year has been all about trying, in fact, kind of late last year, but certainly this year has been all about getting ready for Boston qualifying.
Gotcha.
And it looks good.
Good. That's kind of my trajectory as well, is to you know, keep working on getting a little bit faster, and somewhere when I'm in, you know, 45, 50, 55, somewhere in there, when I get a little more time, when I get a little more buffer on the time goal to qualify for Boston. Would love to do it quicker than that, but goodness, running 3:10, 3:15, something like that. That's
oh man, is that your
fast.
Is it your time now? Roughly
I'm at 3:10 right now. Yeah, I just turned 35, so I just got my first 5 minute buffer, but that's still beyond the realm of comprehension.
Well, and they're stingy with those buffers because even though they expand them a little bit, now if I wait till I'm 60, the buffer's fairly generous. But I will say this. One of the things that I've become very much more aware of in your 50s is how much you start losing some of that power that you had even in your early 50s. So maybe the buffer at 60 is not as generous as I think, because by the time I reach 60, I may say, wow, this is a reach too. They do an excellent job of keeping it just up there tight enough to know it's going to be work. Unless you're a supremely gifted runner, it's going to be work to get into Boston. But this year, I feel like I've done the work, and it looks promising.
Good. I guess you just kind of answered the question, but I know you've got the race coming, and it's actually going to go, you know, I mean, if memory serves, it's like this weekend is the race as we're recording this, so it'll be...
Yeah, it's, as we record this, it's, what is today? It's like 3 days away.
Which race are you running?
The Marquette, Michigan Marathon. And I chose Marquette because it is... On this side of qualifying for 2018, and I would really like to run in the spring of 2018 because Veronica, Ronnie, my daughter who's featured so much in my year of running dangerously, actually lives. She's doing her graduate work at MIT now. She lives on the last mile of the Boston course.
Oh, wow.
And I really would love to run it while she still lives there so she can walk out her door and Dad gets to run right by right there. It'd be a lot of fun. And I have a friend who's run Boston for, 35 years, I think. He's a wonderful runner. And I think he's getting down to one of his last Bostons. And I'd like to start with him. So that's the promise of it all. And it's looking good in that I started out this year. This is sort of complicated. I won't dwell on it too long, but I think you'll find it interesting. Year before last, I kind of went crazy in the promotions of the book. Mm-hmm. I went out and I ran in that fall when the book came out. I ran the Chicago Marathon. Then I think this is right. I don't know if we talked after this. Then after that, I ran 5 marathons in 5 days, which included the Marine Corps Marathon. Mm-hmm. And then I did the New York City Marathon 3 days after that. And then I did a 50 miler 2 weeks after that. And it was really interesting and it was really fun. And it's a whole different world. I have so much respect for, you know, people like Mike Wardian, who did the seven marathons on seven continents in 7 days. You know, Mike and I were talking about it one day, and I found it such an interesting world to do what people like Mike and some other people do just routinely, where they cover these massive distances and they do them, you know, month after month or week after week. It was really interesting to dabble in that world. That said, at the end of that year, I was very much aware of how much this had taken out of me, even though I hadn't been injured in any of it. I essentially lost almost the entire next year of training. Wow. 2016, even though I ran for almost all of 2016, it just felt like my legs were packed full of sand. It was so laborious all year long. And finally, by the time I got around to fall in the Marine Corps Marathon, I felt a little bit more like I was running somewhat normally. And it was a real lesson to me. And so when I came into this year, I knew I was sort of building up. So I started with a diagnostic marathon in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I wasn't totally ready, but I went down and said, let's just run a nice marathon. Let's just see if I can take it under 4 hours and how I feel. And it went well. And then I turned around and tried to train fairly quickly for the Cleveland Marathon, which was going to be late spring, in the hopes that maybe it wouldn't be too hot that day. Mm-hmm. As it was, I trained up. It was pretty warm. I mean, we started at, I think, 65 or 66 degrees and ended around 75. And it's, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's warm enough for a marathon, certainly.
Yeah, right. So I ended up coming in, you know, probably about 3 minutes shorter than I needed to, or, you know, slower than I needed to actually get into Boston, right. Not just to qualify, but to actually get in. So, but that was fine because I thought I was a stretch anyway. It was kind of warm. And then I've trained through summer here. And now Marquette, the reason I chose Marquette, honestly, is because it's a flat to downhill course. It's considered very fast, which is good. It's a very small race, only about 300 people. But more importantly than anything else, it'll probably be about 10 to 15 degrees cooler than anywhere else I could race that weekend.
Yeah, I grew up in northern Michigan. So I mean, not UP North, but the northern part of the Lower Peninsula. So I'm well aware that, you know, the first thing you said when you said Marquette, I said, oh, the weather's going to be in my head. The weather's going to be perfect. Because even if it's quote unquote hot for Marquette this time of year, you're only looking at the high 50s probably would be a hot day at most.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to start at about 55 maybe and end maybe around 65 or 63 or something. And that's, I can do with that. That's fine. I can live with that.
Right.
And I think because of all the hot training this summer, it's good gracious in D.C. It's been just so it's been like running through pancake syrup every day. and it's been but I think that's been good in a way because I was talking to earlier this year. I feel like I'm name dropping all over here. I don't mean to be. But when Meb Keflezighi was in town a couple months ago or a few months back, he and I were chatting and we were just having a really nice visit. And I was talking about my concerns about some of the heat as the summer comes on and how it would affect racing. And he just had the simplest solution in the world. He just said, just keep your winter gear on. Don't take it off. As it gets hotter, you know, as spring moves on, keep your winter gear on as long as you can so that you're used to running in extreme heat.
Wow.
And see if it helps you. And this summer, I haven't kept the, I kept the winter gear on a lot later than I normally would. But then this summer, I also, you know, I just took advantage of the fact that this heat training, if I can find a cool race, will benefit me. And honestly, I went out this morning for just a little shakedown run. And the biggest problem was this feeling of wanting to explode and go because it was cool this morning. I was like, oh my gosh, I could just go forever. It's like, no, just quiet down. You have a race coming up.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, and I've said this a few times at various points along the way on different episodes of the show. So some of the folks have heard this before, but I mean, you know, you're preaching to the choir about the heat and humidity being down here in Central Florida. Like I feel your pain. I know exactly what it's like. And I'll tell you what, every year I'm always surprised, even though I know it's going to come, that once the, you know, for us the fall doesn't get here till after Thanksgiving usually, but whenever the fall finally does show up, and the temperature drops a little bit and the humidity really takes a dive, boy, it is a boost to have, you know, labored through some of those hot and humid days. You'll feel the boost, and like you said, you already felt it, you know, already, you know, just this week. So I got a feeling, you know, good things could be happening this weekend in Marquette, hopefully.
Well, I hope so. And you know, that's the thing. One of the things that I think everybody who runs enough recognizes, and it's one of the most delightful and maddening and perplexing things about this sport. I have had races where I am seemingly perfectly prepared, and I've slept right, and I've eaten right, and everything is on the money, and this is the deal. And for some reason, you know, you get out there and it just doesn't come through. It just doesn't work, and you don't really know why. The flip side is I've had races where, you know, seemingly everything's wrong. Mm-hmm. I went out for a race. There was a 10K that a bunch of my colleagues here in the news media were doing a couple of years ago. And I woke up. I was getting a cold for a few days before it, but I'd promised a lot of people I would be there. And I woke up that morning. I could barely breathe. And my wife was like, "You're not going to this race." And I said, "Well, I really need to. People are counting on me." And I got here and parked and had to cover like a mile and a half to the start line. And I was just miserable. And I was trying to be happy and cheerful with everyone, but I just felt so, so bad. The race started, and this won't sound like a lot to a lot of good runners out there, but for me at that time, it was something. I cranked off the 10K just under 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I was stunned, because when I started running, I felt fantastic. And of course, as soon as the race was over, I went right back to having a cold and feeling miserable. But you know, it's sort of a mystery. But that's, you know, that's I think often about what the great acting coach Konstantin Stanislavski wrote in his book An Actor Prepares. What he said basically was that no one can guarantee a great performance. What you can do is set up favorable circumstances in which a great performance might occur. Mm. And for us, a favorable circumstance is proper training, proper eating, proper sleeping, you know, a sort of a balance of life that makes you not crazy out of your head with distractions at the last minute, and then going out there with that beautiful mix of dynamic tension to drive yourself forward and relaxation to keep yourself from holding yourself back. Mm-hmm. So that's always what I'm looking for, just even on daily runs, but certainly at race time. I'm always saying, try to get in that really perfect place where you care about the outcome, you want to do your best for the outcome, but you have a priority list in your head of what really matters.
Right.
And what matters most to me up in Michigan this weekend is that I have a beautiful run. Beautiful scenery, nice people, lay it down, let it flow. That's mm-hmm. what matters to me. I believe a beautiful run will automatically produce a Boston qualifying time based on my training and my Yazoo 800s and everything. Mm-hmm. I believe it will do it. But if it doesn't do it, honestly, I need to be able to walk off the course as I do every time saying, I had a good day out here and I'm blessed to be able to do it at all. And it's a wonderful feeling. And that's goal number one. And the rest of it's gravy.
Yeah. Yeah. I have vague memories as a kid of being in Marquette for some, you know, family road trip or whatever. I'm pretty safe to say that the beautiful part will be taken care of as far as the scenery goes. Like that's a pretty part of the world, pretty part of the country. And yeah, I mean, hopefully things all come together. And I love that quote because, you know, it really is a good reminder. And it's, you know, like you also said earlier, one of the beautiful things of our sport and one of the most frustrating things is you can do everything right leading up to it. And man, just some, you know, that doesn't guarantee. It's not a perfect equation that if you do this plus this, it's gonna equal a great day on race day. Like things can just happen, and it's always frustrating when that happens to you. But it happens to everybody, and you just, you know, like you said, put yourself in the best position you possibly can with the preparation and taking care of things and hope for the best. And as long as you're having fun, that's really the ultimate name of the game.
Well, and that's, you know, and you know from your experience too that I don't know. To me, that's an awful lot of just how I try to see my life. Mm-hmm. I can't. You know, there are too many things in life that we think we can control that we can't really. And so disappointments will come along and great accomplishments will come along. And it's, you know, to as Kipling said, you try to treat both success and failure as the imposters that they are. Mm. Because it's most days are not about extraordinary successes nor extraordinary failures. And not all of your extraordinary successes nor all of your extraordinary failures are your doing. Some of them are.
Right.
And you should enjoy them. But at the same time, some of them just happen. And when, I mean, there are plenty of people, you know, in this, the economy we've had in this country for the past few years, there are plenty of people who have had setbacks in their jobs mm-hmm. that honestly had nothing to do with them.
Right.
And they don't, you know, if you are a person who holds yourself accountable, and I think many runners do, I think it's the nature of what we do because it's an individual sport. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of us saying to ourselves, if it doesn't work, it's my fault. I think that's healthy in the sense in that it makes us, that accountability makes us work hard at what we do. But it's not healthy if we're not realistic about it. Mm. If you're not saying, well, wait a minute, what is really happening here? And if you know, there was some great calamity in your workplace or in your life or something, and it really got in the way of what you were trying to do, yes, you have to be honest about your part, but you can't just say it's all about that. I often say to my daughters when they have wrestled with things and they have been very upset with themselves over some thing that didn't work out, I often say to them, you're very fair people. You are by nature extremely fair with people. Be as fair with yourself as you are with others. And that means neither giving yourself more leeway nor less. Mm-hmm. Demand a lot of yourself, but be reasonable because I've seen people in careers and in family life and in running who have essentially torn themselves down and destroyed themselves with some manic sense that it all has to be perfect all the time. And I've often said, you know, you have to welcome the bad times as much as you do the good times because we learn from all of them. Right. And they're just a natural part of the cycle of who we are.
Yeah. And I can't remember the source where I heard this from, but I heard somebody say one time that, you know, along the same lines about giving yourself some grace and allowing, you know, that the bad things are going to happen from time to time, or you're not going to live up to your own expectations, that, you know, the way we talk to ourselves a lot of times, that inner voice, that inner monologue that we sometimes have with ourselves is so, like, we would never allow anyone to talk to us like that. We would never talk to anyone like that, but we allow ourselves the freedom to just berate ourselves sometimes when things are completely out of our control. We have a bad race, even though you did all the training and things go wrong, or like you said, something at work, something with the family, whatever it might be. If you can learn to give yourself a little bit of grace and, you know, just accept that, you know, some days things go well and some days they don't, you'll be doing yourself a lot of favors when all is said and done.
Yeah, well, and a lot of that is making sure you stay in the moment. Mm-hmm. And that is, for me, I've lived that way for a long, long time. And it's kind of funny because now I think that's what people are talking about when they talk about the mindfulness movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is interesting to me because I've always kind of just naturally done that. So when I first heard about it, I thought, well, that's just kind of how I've tried to live my entire life. So it doesn't seem like a discipline to me. It just seems like a way you would be. But in a nutshell, my father, who passed away some years ago, had an interesting philosophy about weekends that I really came to appreciate as I grew up more and more. My father used to get up not crazy early, but he got up early on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And his argument was, this is my off day. Why on earth would I want to sleep in? This is the day I get to do what I want to do. Not just work. And my dad actually loved work. He worked very hard and he loved work. But he said, of course I wouldn't sleep in. I want to do, and I try to see really every single day that way, work and everything else. My whole view is, this is where I am. Mm-hmm. This is the circumstance that faces me. Why on earth would I not try to enjoy it every way possible? Because even if it's miserable, you know, it can be made better by your attitude about it. I say I would make a terrible prisoner. I think I would make
a terrible one too, Tom, if we're going to be honest.
No, I think I'd drive the guards crazy because I'd be like John Candy in one of those old movies. You know, oh, it's a small cell, but it's okay. You know, I'm all right here. It's good. It's cozy. Cozy is what it is.
Oh, goodness. Goodness. Yeah, it's, it, you know, it, being in the moment and you know, I mean, kudos to you for really, you know, making that part of your daily routine. It's something that I've certainly been trying to work on. You know, it's, you know, with my running, with some other areas of my life, it's always like, oh, I can't wait until I get to, you know, until I get to breaking this time barrier, until I, you know, build my business to this point, or I get this many people that listen to the podcast, or I have, you know, this great of a workout or whatever. And it's always, you know, you kind of run that risk of where you are is never good enough. Even when you get to where you want it to be, there's always that next thing that you're chasing. So,
well, yeah, but you know, I'm not old, but right? I'm old enough to say I can wait for anything.
Right.
I'm in no hurry to go rushing toward the grave, which is what you start doing at some point. I'm sort of like, listen, this is the day, man. Let's have it go on right now. And like Warren Zevon said, enjoy every sandwich because it's, this is the moment and it's, and I will say that is a gosh, that's a wonderful thing for running because you get out there and you know, good, bad, or otherwise, to say here I am right now and this is the thing. Mm-hmm. It's it just feels wonderful. And this morning I did something really stupid. I briefly, while I was running, I stopped and I had this picture that I was going to put on Instagram, and I was kind of fiddling with it and sort of tottering along, and I stopped. And I looked up and I promise you, I actually sort of gasped because when I looked up from it and I forgot all about running and I forgot all about my stupid phone and about apps and all of this stuff. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful morning. And the Potomac River was flowing by me and the trees were that late summer green and the light was filtering down onto the trail in front of me. And I looked around and I thought, well, who could ever ask to be in a better place than this right now? Mm-hmm. This is just beautiful, and this is wonderful. And I know there are other wonderful places in the world, but for me, for that moment, wow, what a great place to be. And you know what? Running took me there.
Right, right. And, you know, there might be a million other wonderful places in the world, but you weren't in any of them. So why not take the moment?
Yes.
Again,
so
be in the moment. And appreciate where you are. This is where I am, and it's beautiful. You know, that's a great reminder.
Yeah, I can't worry about the pie somebody's enjoying in Spain because it's not my pie.
Right, exactly, exactly. I'd be curious, shifting gears a little bit, and you know, you mentioned it actually earlier, and it was something on my list to talk about. So, you know, for a little bit of context, you know, with the five marathons in 5 days and kind of where you were at that point, we talked just before – I remember a week or two, maybe a month before all of that was happening. It was in kind of mid October of 2015 that we talked. I know that where those races fall in the calendar, you know, end of October, beginning of November was when all that was going to happen. So, going back to that time, because I'm really intrigued by the idea of doing, you know, several marathons consecutively on days in a row. It sounded like when you brought it up briefly at the beginning of our chat today that wasn't too bad, but that, you know, the payoff or the payback came later that next year when your legs were just super fatigued. But how were, you know, running marathons on back-to-back days for a week, and then, you know, you had another one a couple days later, another one a week later, or whatever it was? I mean, was that as difficult as I would imagine it in my head, or was it kind of one of those situations where you're pacing yourself accordingly because you know that there's no reason to lay it all out today because I got to do this again tomorrow? How did that all play out?
It's, you know, you fall into the ultra running mode, which is to just keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. And you're pacing yourself out because what you sort of tell yourself is that, okay, I'm going to do this forever. Mm-hmm. This is my training schedule. And I will say the interesting change that happened was after 3 days of doing it, I was a little, I started going a little bit nutty. Hmm. Enough so, and because you don't know how to adjust everything accordingly, because that's so much effort over that period of time. And I wasn't trying to grind these things out like a rocket. I was just like, just get through them, mm-hmm. take your time. And I woke up and just really didn't feel great and just seemed, I was listless and I couldn't focus very well. And my wife said to me, because she was sort of crewing this effort, because mm-hmm. the runs occurred between here in D.C. and then up to New York. And we were somewhere in Pennsylvania, I think. And she said, I think you need to have a real breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I don't really feel hungry. And you know that feeling of a lot of effort. Sometimes you don't feel like you want to eat.
Right.
And we went to an International House of Pancakes.
fine establishment.
When I want to have pancakes, I want them to have an
international
global feel,
right?
A global feel. Well, that's why they're round. And we went in and I ordered the something, whatever kind of meal they have that involves a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. like eggs and bacon and pancakes and heaven knows what. I ordered it and I sat there and I kind of poked at it and took a bite or two. And I was like, I really don't feel like eating much. And like 12 minutes later, I had devoured everything on the table, including about half of her meal. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you were hungry. And I said, I guess I was. And it sort of reset everything. So that kind of running, I think it raises a lot of questions that we don't think about during normal running. Mm-hmm. You don't really, you think about nutrition, but it's a little more episodic. You know, I have this run today, I'll eat that. I had this run, you know, this race, whatever. When you're doing it day after day, suddenly you start saying, no, this is fundamentally off altering the core of how you get through this. And the one real sign I had that this was producing an odd feeling was then when we did the New York City Marathon, my daughter and I, in fact, I'm looking at a calendar now where it happened. It was actually 4 days after the last one. So on a Wednesday, I did the last of the mm-hmm. five marathons in a row. Then I took 3 days off and I ran New York on Sunday. And I felt at 9 miles the way I would typically feel at 22 miles in a marathon, which was really interesting. And it wasn't a stopper, but mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, this is added up on me. This is some stuff here. And so then, you know, I finished, and then I had 2 weeks until I ran the Stone Mill 50-miler again. And the 50-miler, as you would guess, was, you know, it was a 50-mile shuffle mm-hmm. that went okay, and I felt all right with it, and I was glad I finished. But it's a very different thing to do. And I do sort of recommend it for people who have reached a point in their running or racing career that they want to consider ultra running. It's really interesting and fun. And it's a very unusual challenge that's totally different than the challenge of trying to be fast at something. Mm-hmm. And it's all got me sort of excited. Do you know about this race in Wales called the Dragon's Back?
I don't think so.
It's like 5 days of, I think it's like 5 days of racing down sort of the mountainous spine of Wales. Mm. And it's one of those things where kind of like Barclays, you have a map and you have to hit certain points and check in. Mm-hmm. But how you get there is up to you. Mm. And you're running of these, I mean, some of the photographs are just stunning about the mountain ranges they're running over. But, you know, you're camping out overnight and then you're running. And all of this made me sort of think, well, once I get through with Boston, which I hope happens, mm-hmm. then in all likelihood, I'll be slower at some point. And as I get slower, maybe I just focus much more on ultra running, maybe. And mm-hmm. if so, the Dragon's Back would be fun to do. And of course, I'd love to do Comrades in South right. Africa. I think that would be such a great joy.
Yeah, there's some definitely some epic ultra distance races out there. I ran my first ultra earlier this year in I guess it was late February,
excellent.
Early March of this year.
Which one did you do?
I it was just a little one down here. It was called the Long Play 33 and a third, kind of themed after the old vinyl LPs. So it was, instead of being a 50K, it was 33.3 miles, of course. And
cool.
It was a good experience. I enjoyed it. And I'm curious, you know, For you and in your perspective, you know, you did these five marathons in 5 days, plus New York, plus a couple other ones, plus the ultra. Do you think, and you know, again, with the year of having the legs be pretty heavy and not being able to train quite as hard because of the recovery process after it, maybe not so much, but I'm still curious. Do you think that doing some things longer than marathon distance or doing maybe several, you know, doing like some type of challenge where you're doing, you know, a couple of marathons in a row or a week's worth or whatever the case might be. There's various organizations that do those types of things as well. Do you think that helps you, hurts you, or doesn't play much of a difference in terms of then, you know, fast forwarding, recovering a little bit and trying to really nail a marathon quickly? You know, in your case, trying to get to Boston. Do you think all of that volume and that perspective of running slow and, you know, taking it, you know, one step at a time and all those kind of cliches, but they actually really, you know, I've learned from doing an ultra that they do, you know, that is a big part of it. Do you think that helps you in trying to get faster for a marathon?
You know, it's an interesting question to which I think the variables are many. I think it depends partially on your age, because I think your recovery powers are so much more intense when you're younger that maybe the damage doesn't linger with you as long. On the other hand, a lot of really good ultra runners are somewhat older, because there's a quality of, I think, concentration and patience that seems to be a little bit easier for older runners than younger runners when you're out there running for, you know, 10 or 12 hours. In terms of how it relates to speed, I'm not sure that I know the answer, because, as I said, I'm trying to be fast this year.
Right.
So I've been doing a lot of speed work, which previously I have not done. And I've been on the track much more than I've ever been, because, you know, Bart Yazzo at Runner's World, out at the Big Sur Marathon earlier this year, which I ran with Ronnie just for fun. We just went out and had a great time. What a great race. Oh, my gosh. The Big Sur Marathon. Beautiful, 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 and great people. But during the race, Bart and I were running together a little bit chatting. And Bart says, look, if you want to get faster, you have to go to the track. Because the track makes you honest. There's no pretending that a distance at a quarter mile is something different because your GPS says it's something different. There's no pretending your time is a little bit different because you fudged on the distance. You know exactly what you're doing. And I believe that to be true. I will say the one thing that comes from doing these great sort of monumental runs and ultra running that I think is very valuable is it teaches you a lot about how much further you can go than you think. And I've read a good bit in the past couple of years about the degree to which people feel tired, and you think it's your lungs and you think it's your legs, but a lot of it is just what you're thinking. And in fact, there's one study that I found really interesting that I don't entirely understand, but it suggested that what is actually causing this sense of fatigue in even elite athletes is not the degree to which their legs and lungs and heart have been taxed by the run. That is a big part of it, but that is actually the nervous system growing tired, because it's been sending the signal so repeatedly to demand extra effort that as part of an evolutionary way of protecting ourselves, the nervous system starts sort of pulling back and saying, no, you're doing too much. And I find that really intriguing, because you then start saying, and as you know from your ultra, and I know from my ultras, I often say to people, when you think you can't take another step, in my experience, you probably have about 20 more miles in you. And most of us never get past that point of thinking, I can't take another step. And I will say that's been very valuable, because when I've been in a hard race now, or I'm having a hard run, that little bell in the back of my head says, hey, man, you've done a lot further than this. This may be a hard run, but don't think that it's the end. Keep going.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting about the nervous system. I'd always, you know, kind of heard that it was the brain, but I guess, I mean, the brain is part of the nervous system, so it could be part of, you know, it's all kind of intertwined. But that, you know, it's kind of that adaptive response of, like, you know, yes, you're pushing yourself hard right now, but, like, you know, what happens if a lion jumps out? Like, we need to save a little bit in case there's a real emergency that we need to run for. So that's kind of why it shuts you down. But I think that's along the lines of why I, you know, have dipped my toes into the ultra water a little bit, is that, you know, when training for a marathon, it's like, you know, you go to what, 20 miles, 22 miles, something like that, depending on what your training philosophy is and how you're feeling and your base of fitness and whatnot. But, you know, you never really get to 26.2. And I always find myself when I'm trying to race a marathon falling apart at 20 miles or 22 miles or something. Like, that's where it really hits me. So my theory was, if I try to run a couple ultras a year, maybe something like that, and I'm not going to race them, I'm not going to burn them real fast, but get out there and go 30 miles, 35 miles, whatever the case might be, that I'll have that little bit of extra confidence when I get to mile 22 that, like, gosh, this is starting to really wear on me, that, like, yes, but, you know, a few months ago you ran 35 miles, so you can go four more miles and get to the finish line. So that was my logic behind the idea of running an ultra.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Do you run, are you able to run negative splits?
No, I'm terrible at that. I am,
really?
I am the worst at holding a steady pace. Like,
you know, I mean, I'm always...
go ahead.
I believe, that if you want to, I mean, if you want to do better at races like that, I'm a firm believer in this. And heaven knows I'm the first to say I guess I don't really know much about running. I like to think I do, and then I meet people who really do, and I realize what an idiot I am. But I believe that more, especially if you're an early marathoner, if you're somebody who's only done one or two, mm-hmm. I would not recommend then saying, oh, I'll take on an ultra as a way to get better for marathons. Right. I don't think that works that well. But if you're a really experienced marathoner, I think that it can be a useful tool for the very reason you described. But a more useful tool, I think, is learning to control yourself in that first 15 miles. Actually, the first 20 miles, but at least the first 15 miles. And I am such a believer in that. I try very hard to run negative splits when I can, because invariably I get a better result. And in fact, in Cleveland, I think the reason I finished with a 3:40.34, and I needed about a 3:36 to 3:37. Mm-hmm. But the reason I think that happened is I wasn't feeling great going into that race. I was feeling pretty tired, and it was sort of warm. There are numerous things that were going on. In the end, it's all up to me, but mm-hmm. but nonetheless, there were various factors that weren't optimum. So I ran the best race I thought I could that day, but it still felt like about an 80 to 85% race for me. But one of the mistakes I made was, because I didn't feel great, but I knew what time hack I was trying to hit, I fell in with the pacing group for a 3:35, mm-hmm. which is fine, but it pushed me through that first 15, 16 miles probably a little faster than I should have been going. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, there are various reasons I made that decision. That wasn't an accident. That was a decision. But sure enough, at 16 miles, when the heat came on, it hit me like a big hand, and I fell off. And I'm looking at my splits chart on the wall over here, and you can see it. It's like mm-hmm. a cliff. After 16, it's not like my miles completely fell apart, but that's where I really lost the time. And I do think, in retrospect, if I would have been a little more generous with myself during the first 16 miles – and picked up an extra 5 seconds or so per mile, 5 or 8 seconds per mile for the first 16 miles, mm-hmm. I'll bet my remaining 10 miles would have been substantially better, and I'll bet my net time would have been better.
Right. I'm a fan of the negative split, and I try to do it most of the time. As you're telling that story, I'm thinking back to about a year ago at the last marathon that I ran and really tried to run somewhat intelligently. You know, the plan was to go very conservative through 20 miles and then, you know, try to hit the last 10K. Basically my goal was to have the last 10K be about 55 minutes or so. And I wasn't even worried about how fast or slow the first 20 miles was. I was trying to save everything for that last little push. Cause like I said, I've always struggled and fallen apart at the end of a race. So, you know, run easy and try to finish hard. And, I just got cocky.
What happens to you? Why do you not do that?
Well, you know, I got cocky. I was feeling really good at 15, 16 miles, and I said, well, you know, why wait 4 more miles to pick it up a little bit? Let's start going, just maybe not quite full pace that I wanted to be, but let's pick it up just a little bit now. And I just got impatient and made a rookie mistake when I wasn't a rookie. I should have known better. and you know, it didn't take long after, and it also, you know, in somewhat fairness, kind of like you in Cleveland, it did heat up quite a bit. It was a lot hotter that day than it was, you know, forecasted to be. And
right. And that's tricky. And that's always tricky, especially in a race as long as a marathon.
Yeah. And I did get maybe a little cocky there, cause I'm like, man, I'm from Florida. This isn't that hot for what I've been training in for this time of year. So like, I should be fine. And I just, looking back on it, it's easy to see all of the stupid mistakes I made. But in the moment I was like, oh, I feel good. Let me crank up the, you know, I'd gone without music for a while, cause I was like, I'm going to use the music as a real boost when I get to a point when I'm ready to go. So I fired the music up and I just took off like a shot. And by the time I got to mile 20, which is when I was supposed to start going, my better miles were behind me, and it was a real drag for the last 10K.
It's very hard. I mean, it's a real act of faith to make yourself run slowly for mm-hmm. that first 15 or 20 miles. But I tell you something that I have done a lot of in half marathons. Because I'm usually using a half marathon as a training device for something else. Mm-hmm. But what I will very often do is I will either find somebody who's running pretty well, not quite as fast as I want to run, and tuck in behind them, or I will pick a pacer and say, okay, mm-hmm. here's the pace group for people who want to run, let's say, a 155 mm-hmm. or something, something where I know that that's, you know, completely easy and doable right. for me. And I will simply say, you know what I'm going to do? I will get behind this pacer, and under no circumstances will I break away until at least mile 9 or mile 10. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an interesting experiment because, you know, sometimes you're feeling really great at mile 7
right.
or mile 6. And you're saying, oh, come on, these guys are just creeping. Why don't I go? And I make myself stay there and say, no, you made a promise to yourself, stay put. And you start feeling like a horse pulling at the reins. And you feel like all this energy is storing up. And then when you go, when you hit mile 10 and you say, okay, that's it, 3 to go, I'm gone. It's such a great relief to suddenly explode forward and just let your legs fly and to then cross the line feeling like you're still gaining speed mm-hmm. is fantastic. And I'll tell you something, there is nothing, you probably have had this experience some, but the real greatness of running a negative or running negative splits to me is that miraculous feeling of saying, wow, I just ran a marathon and my last 3 miles were as fast or faster than anything else mm-hmm. in the race. That's a great, great feeling. It's just a great way to finish a race and feel good. I don't know if that'll happen at Marquette because, I mean, I'm really trying to lay out everything I can. And when you start calculating down to the end like that, it's really easy to make a mistake that'll mm-hmm. eat you up over a mile or two or whatever. And I don't know the course that well. But you know what? I'm going to go give it my best, and I'm going to try really hard to behave for that first 15 or 20 miles. And I know it's going to be tough because I'm mm-hmm. looking at a time mark.
Right.
And there's that fear of, well, gee, if I fall off in the last 6, look at the trouble I'll be in because mm-hmm. I'm just barely on the mark now, or I'm not quite at the mark right now. And there's a tendency to want to bank time. And I don't know, maybe some people can. I can't bank time. I've tried. And I'll go out there and eat it up, and I think, I'm banking time. Look, I'm so far ahead of the pace. And man, I pay it back with interest. Mm-hmm. Oh, do I pay it back.
Yeah, I know a few people, or at least I know of a few people who say that they can bank time, but yeah, I don't know very many people that can successfully do it. And you know, I've learned that lesson in the 5K and the 10K and the half marathon, and I've gotten pretty good, honestly, at being able to control myself in those shorter distances and not stressed, you know, go out, you're like, here's the pace I want to run, so let's add 15 seconds to it for the first, you know, 3 or 4 miles for the half marathon, and finally settle into that pace in the half at, you know, mile 4, and then cruise it at that pace until, like you said, about 10 miles and then hit it for the last 5K. I've been able to do that at half marathons and shorter. And I just, you know, like, I don't know, maybe I haven't run enough marathons yet. Maybe the training hasn't been quite to the level it should be to really race a hard marathon. And that's, like I said, to, you know, go back to the ultra thing. That's one of the reasons I've done that, is to try to push myself a little bit farther, to add some more miles, to work the brain a little bit more in hopes that I'll be more confident in my strategy. Because I know it works. It works for so many people to negative split. And that's always the goal. I just haven't had the discipline to stick to it and see what happens.
Well, here's something. I'll tell you what. You keep working on that, and I'm going to work on something that I keep reading about that I'm very intrigued by. You know the whole no watch me movement? This whole business of not looking at your watch?
I don't know that there's a – I didn't know that there's a movement, but I'm a fan of
there's
the idea.
Well, there's this movement of among runners to some degree. Tina Muir is a big believer in it. This idea of you know, running by effort mm-hmm. and ignoring what the clock says. And there are many runners out there who are swearing by this. They're saying, you know what? I went out and I just said I'm just going to run my best marathon and have a great run and never look at my watch. And so many of them come back saying, and it turned out to be my fastest marathon by far, mm-hmm. which is really interesting because I have a really a really good running buddy here named Barry Hauptman. He organizes Stone Mill, and he's very involved with running, a wonderful runner. And Barry was telling me about how he had a race years ago, a marathon, where he was running a magnificent race. I mean, he was just flying and having the time of his life and feeling great. And somewhere around, I think he said around like 15 or 16 miles, he glanced at his watch and realized that he was way ahead of pace, mm-hmm. that he was tearing this marathon up. And he said, oh, well, I better pull back because I'll get in trouble later on. He said, I pulled back and crossed the line feeling like I could run the race again. Mm. And he said, and I've regretted it ever since because my watch made me pull back from what would have probably been my best marathon ever. Because I was like, oh, no, that the watch tells mm-hmm. me something else. So the whole no watch me movement is this idea of just go run without your watch if now and then, maybe race mm-hmm. without it now and then, and just see what happens. And I don't have, kind of like you talk about the splits, I don't quite have the thing in me right now to do that. Because I think, well, I'm going to train all this for a marathon, and what if I get out there, and I'm like, I'm feeling great. What a great race. And I say, well, of course you felt great because you ran 9:30 the entire time.
Right.
You know, which is the fear. But I would, I think I'm going to experiment with that some after I get through Marquette, just to see what it, because I'm signed up for the Marine Corps Marathon and the New York City Marathon this year as well, mm. which will just be, I hope, just kind of fun runs.
Right.
But I may, if things work out in Marquette, I may very well try it at one of those. I may just say, I'm not even going to wear a watch. I'm just going to go have a fun run for 26 miles and just see what happens. Because it would be curious. Or maybe I'll take a piece of tape and put it over mm-hmm. the face of the watch when I start. So I'll have a tracking when I finish, but during the race, I won't have one. That would be kind of fun to do. So I don't know, but it's really interesting because to a degree we can get so caught up in all the training and all the timing and all of these artificial things that we erect around running that, I very often find myself trying to, I make a lot of references to writing and to art and things because I see many things in my life I sort of view in a very holistic way. I see everything as being related to everything else, and they have similar disciplines. You know, Picasso, I guess, famously said he spent his entire life learning to draw like a child. Mm-hmm. And by that he meant that children are very unfettered in their artwork. They draw very freely, and they sort of fill up the space with this wonderful sense of balance just because it's something that's intrinsic in them. I feel like when it comes to running, I spend a lot of time trying to remind myself to run like a child. Mm. Because when I was a kid, oh man, I felt like I could just explode across the plains of South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And then when we moved to Illinois, around the fields down there, I just felt like I could just go forever and ever. And just, it just felt explosive and wonderful. And there was nothing but the joy of just flying over the ground. And I try sometimes, and I try a lot of the time to remind myself of that. And in fact, lately, it's sort of weird. I did a story years ago about brain type and how people process information and how it affects their performance. And based on that, I've been thinking a little bit lately. I've been running, and I really don't know a whole lot about Bill Rogers. Mm. You know, I've seen him in person a time or two, and I know his racing legacy. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really read deeply about him. But I love the look of Bill Rogers when he was running. I love that free-flowing, smiling, relaxed. I mean, for crying out loud, a guy who stops and ties his shoe in the middle of the Boston Marathon and still wins.
Right.
That's pretty great. And I've tried lately to sort of just visualize when I'm out there running. I've thought about Bill Rogers, and I've thought, forget about, let your brain go somewhere else. Instead of thinking about your time and thinking about your training and thinking about the heat and thinking about your legs and all this stuff, be somewhere else for a while. And when I do that, I see a little movie in my head of Bill Rogers running. And I think, yeah, run like that. Be that guy for a while. And I find that very freeing. And mm-hmm. it makes me let go of all this other stuff, which I think we need to let go of. Because good gracious, you're carrying enough when you run.
Yeah.
You don't have to carry all this other garbage. And I try to think a little bit less about running right now and say, go run, but run for what running always meant for me, which was free time to let my mind wander mm-hmm. and to just feel that, all the ideas that drift through your head that have nothing to do with running. I've spent runs thinking about plays I'd like to write and thinking about paintings I want to do and thinking about inventions that I think would be interesting and I find all of that very relaxing and wonderful. And when I do that, that's when I most come in from a 6-mile run wishing it were a 12-miler. Mm-hmm. and come in from a 15-mile run wishing I could go to 20 because I'm having so much fun thinking about other things. And I think that kind of joy and that kind of pleasure from running turns it into something that transcends sport and fitness. And it makes it something about our lives that connects us with, you know, the evolutionary tide of what humans are and what we can be. And then I just feel spectacular. And, you know, I don't need a watch and I don't need a course and I don't need a number for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great reminder. And yeah, I mean, turn the mind off once in a while. Listen to the podcast, but, you know, you keep running, keep running after the podcast ends, or leave the headphones home one time and just go out and just let your mind wander. Don't worry about your watch. Leave your watch home, or like you said, put a piece of tape over it. We've had folks do that before that I'm working with, where it's like, you know what? I don't want you, you know, you can keep track of the mileage afterwards, but tape over the watch and just have fun.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't listen to a lot while I run. I've done a little bit more this summer. Because there are a few days when I sort of felt I needed a distraction from the heat. Mm-hmm. But usually, if I'm on a long run in particular, after about an hour, I start finding listening to anything starts bothering me. It's sort of irritating me because there's something that's, oh gosh, it's so great to just listen to whatever the noise is out there. You know, whether it's birds in the trees, or you hear a deer crackling off in the brush, or you hear cars whizzing by. I run past I guess the Navy facility out here on the edge of D.C. And I didn't realize it until I ran past one morning at precisely 8 o'clock. But at precisely 8 o'clock, they play the national anthem. Mm. And if you look through the wire fence, you can see people working at various jobs all over this facility who stop for the national anthem. Well, if I had headphones in, I probably wouldn't even hear that.
Right.
And I love hearing that. And I've heard, you know, owls, and I've heard different birds calling, and I've you know, heard woodpeckers up in the trees, and I frogs and ducks, and it's just it's fantastic. And usually that lets my mind drift more, because honestly the problem is when I listen to too much when I'm running, it's like I brought the house with me.
Right.
I love the house, I love my family, but sometimes I'm like, no, I don't want any of that right now. I just want to be out here and be away from it all. And it took me a while to think that, because, you know, you want to think, oh, well, this will be great. I'll spend this time listening to a book or doing whatever. And I think that's good for sometimes. But I think it's also really good to turn it off sometimes and just be out there, because, good gracious, I guess you're probably like me. Who was it said this? There's some famous woman many years ago who said, everybody hears so much every day, they don't know anything. Mm. And I sometimes I feel that way. I feel like in my job here, I every day it is just, you know, drinking from a fire hose of information. And it's flowing in from a million different sources, and there is so, so much of it. And every now and then I have to stop. And this year, in fact, for the past couple of years, I've always been a big reader, but the past couple of years I've been reading a whole lot more books. Mm. Because for a while, I felt like all I was doing was reading articles and quick hit things. And all of a sudden, I said, no, you need to get back to reading books, something that makes you not merely take in an idea, but to process it over a period of days or weeks. So I've read a book about, I just finished a book about the Anasazi, and I've been reading a book about the Lewis chessmen, the theory that they were carved in Iceland, which I think is really interesting. And I'm going to read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, which I've owned for a million years and I've never read. And, you know, I just got a whole stack of books next to the bed that are just, that just sort of call out to me. And I'm reading, there's this wonderful, wonderful book called Independent People. It was a Pulitzer Prize winner written by an Icelandic writer in, I think 1956 or something, a long time ago. Gosh, what a fantastic book. It's like, you know, when you discover a new trail near your own home, it's like not that far from you. And you're like, how could this have been here all this time? And I never knew it was here. Right. It's fantastic. That's how I am about some of these books. And that all fits into this idea of that I've been going through lately of saying, yeah, remember what's quality about your running time. And in all fairness, pal, at my age, it's not going to be that I'm that fast. I can get faster and I can have fun, but I'm not going to the Olympics. I'm not even going to the senior Olympics. I'm just going to have some good runs, and that'll be nice. But what I really want is to make sure that it's something that matters to me.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. As we're getting to the point of wrapping up, Tom, one last question. We can make this kind of the last thing and kind of go pretty quick here, because I know we're extending on a little bit longer than normal, but if you've got a couple minutes.
That's all right. Sure.
You're talking about the different books that are on the nightstand and things that you want to read. And, I read my Year of Running Dangerously, your book. It was a great book, and I know lots of folks have read it as well. I'd just be curious, you know, to kind of, as we're wrapping up today, some of the feedback you've gotten. I'm assuming you've gotten lots of feedback. I know I've heard lots of things from people that have like read the book, like, oh my gosh, it was such a great book. Are there any things that people have written to you or told you about, you know, after they had a chance to read the book or listen to it on Audible or whatever the case might be, that really stand out in your mind and make you go, oh wow, like, you know, I'm so glad I wrote this because, you know, so-and-so had this to say about it?
Yeah, I could go on all day about all the wonderful things that people have said. And I don't think that's a testament. I mean, I guess it's a testament to the book, but it's a testament to how generous runners are. It's so nice. I've received notes from people. There's a doctor somewhere in South Africa, a young woman who's just like becoming a doctor, who sent me a bunch of notes about it. And I've had notes from Australia and from various places in Europe and of course all over this country. And it's just a wonderful thing to me when particularly beginning runners or people who are trying a marathon for the first time or something, right, and say that it made them laugh and it made them feel that there are normal people doing the thing they want to do. One of the more common comments I get from people is they say there are so many books written by superior runners, mm-hmm. by these, you know, monster runners out there who are extraordinary, and it's fascinating to read them. But they're in, I think I referred to it in the book as runner porn. They're in that category. They're so extreme. They're nothing like what most of us can ever dream of. And a lot of people have said that they really appreciate that in the book I wrote about kind of normal life. The fact that running is, as I said, the first challenge isn't getting fit. It's getting running to fit. Mm-hmm. Because we all have busy lives, and we have to have busy lives because it's the way the world works these days. But that it's not... that being a great runner while neglecting your family or your community or your church or whatever it is you choose to be part of is not really being great, is it? I mean, that starts becoming something else. And so many people have seemed to express their feelings of how nice it was to know that they're not alone in struggling that way. The running is a struggle enough, right? But in struggling to make it all work and to make it fit into their lives properly. And I think that's been very encouraging. And I must say, Denny, one of the things I remind myself of, you know, you get near the end of a long race and you're hurting or you're struggling. And it's so easy to look at other people around you and think, I'm going through all this agony and they're just fine. And I don't believe that to be true. Right. Having run enough of them and been around it, I think there are a lot of wonderful runners out there, even really good ones. And they're hurting as much as you are, and maybe more. And I think that's a good reminder. And I like the fact that people look at this book and say, it's nice to know that for all these kind of dazzling runs, that you were suffering and you had doubts. And you had fears and you had difficulties with them all, because I think we all go through that and we all go through it. And that's, you know, one of the more important things that I think we have to do in running, particularly with young runners they're young to running. Mm-hmm. They may be 50 years old and they just started.
Right.
They're young to running. I think with young runners in particular, we have to remember that. You know, I'm often, when I'm speaking to running groups, I often say, remember, for a lot of people out there, running 2 miles may be as hard as it is for you to run 20. Mm-hmm. It may be harder. And they need the same encouragement, and they need that same sense of people saying, what you did was good today, and you should be proud of what you did today, because they really should be, because we've all been there, man. I mean, there was a time in my life when I thought, you know, the idea of running 6 miles was monumental,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now I don't think that, but I think it for those who are struggling with it, and I respect what they're doing. So hearing from all these people, the biggest, I will say the interesting thing about writing the book was this. I feel like in some ways, you know, I mentioned earlier the idea of setting up favorable circumstances in which something good might occur. I've spent a lifetime in journalism, and I've spent a lifetime reading and writing. And in a sense, I think all of that set up favorable circumstances for writing this book. In the end, the book felt like a gift to me from the cosmos. You know, I felt like all I was doing was just telling a story, which was just sharing the experience, not just that I had, but that my family had, and that friends had, and that other runners had, all of which shaped the experience for me. So I became, you know, the person who wrote the book, but the book isn't really about me, I don't suppose. I think it's about an awful lot of us and what mm-hmm. we go through. And I love the fact that this is something that people take away from it. And I want people to take that away from it. I hope a lot of people read the book, not because I care about book sales, because they've done fine and all that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But because I think it's so, so, so nice to know to get these notes from people who are struggling somewhere with anything. And sometimes it's not running, but who write and say, you know, I read this and it helped. Well, who could ask for more than that? Mm.
Yeah, definitely. And guys, if you haven't read it yet, again, My Year of Running Dangerously, it's available wherever books are sold. And you can also get it on Audible. You get it free on Audible at disruns.com/audible. But Tom even narrated it, so you could hear his velvety voice reading the book to you whenever you
want. The velvet fog. That was a great nickname. What is it? Meld for me with a velvet fog.
Uh-huh,
uh-huh. Yeah. I don't think I'm known as the velvet fog. I think I'm known as the sandpaper storm front. I don't know.
Well, tomato, tomato. I like the voice. So check it out on Audible. And if you'd rather have the copy in your hand, which is kind of my preferred method, get it on Amazon, bookstores, wherever you want. My Year of Running Dangerously, definitely worth checking out. And again, at Tom Foreman, CNN on all the socials, disruns.com/464 for this episode, and disruns.com/281 to check out our first conversation. That would be the best of link, but same thing. It's the same conversation ripped from one to the next. So check it out there. If you missed our first conversation, you'll enjoy it. If you like this one, you're going to enjoy that one as well. So
I must say, I do with social media, I do respond to almost anybody on social media. Yes. Unless you're saying horrible things to me. but I do respond. So if you drop a note, there's a very good chance I'll respond. And I love to hear about your racing. I love to hear about what you're doing with your life. I just find people interesting. And if I don't respond, it means I just overlooked it. Just send it again mm-hmm. some way, and I'll respond again. Because I love connecting with runners. They make me feel a lot of hope in a world that at times doesn't feel terribly hopeful.
Yes. And that's a good place to wrap it up. So again, Tom Foreman, CNN on all the socials. Connect with him, check him out, say hi. And he is one of those people with the blue check mark that does get back to you, and it's actually him. So it's a good place to connect. So Tom, thanks for taking the time to catch up today. Maybe let's not wait 2 years to do this again, but appreciate your time. Great luck this weekend, which will be 2 weeks ago by the time this is released, but hope that the race goes well, and preemptive or hopeful congratulations. And again, thanks for the time, and nothing but the best going forward.
Man, you are the best, my friend. Anytime. It's great talking to you, and good luck down there in Florida with the running, because it'll stay hot there when it's cool up here.
Oh, ain't that the truth.
Come join me. Come up here and run with me one day. We'll have a good time.
It's on my list. I promise you that.
All right, pal.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation, the round two, catching back up with Mr. Tom Foreman himself. As you can see, he's an easy guy to talk to, lots of great stories and lots of things to pull from, which was obviously why so many folks had requested him to come back on and do another episode with him. So again, if you missed the first episode, check out the show notes, because I don't have the links right in front of me, but go back and check that out, enjoy, you know, a similar conversation, obviously different topics, but lots of other great stories and moving through things in that episode as well. A little postscript here, a little something that like we talked about, Tom was gearing up for his next Boston qualifying attempt, and he nailed it. I believe he said he came in about 7 minutes under the time he needed. So clearly, he's well surpassed the window, the time frame that he needed, and he'll be able to run in this year's Boston Marathon. So that's exciting for him. And who knows? Maybe we'll bring him back again for a round three somewhere after Boston, and get to hear his take on the Boston Marathon, because you all know how much I love to talk to anybody who ran Boston, and I certainly love talking to Tom as well. So that'd be a good way to kill two birds with one stone, and a good excuse to get Tom back for round three at some point, maybe 6 or so months down the line. But anyway, takeaways for today. What stood out to you from this episode? For me, let me be honest. The whole episode was a takeaway for me. Usually when I'm recording these, I kind of write down a couple of notes of what might my takeaway be. And then when I go back and kind of listen through it again, I'm like, oh yeah, that really was what the thing that stood out the most. And, this episode, there's nothing that I wrote down, because nothing stood out above it all. There were so many good things. But, I think that the takeaway that I will take from this episode, or maybe at least the one that I will highlight, is the idea of doing some runs sans technology, sans headphones, just getting out there and really, using, an hour, 2 hours, whatever the case might be for your training run, using that as an opportunity to just kind of get away from the noise of life, and soak up the noise of nature. And, maybe there's some car noises in the background, but, listen to the wind, listen to the sound of yourself breathing, listen to the animals, the nature, the birds singing, what's going on around you, the sound of your foot on either on the road or on the trail. It's something I don't do very often. I am guilty of being that guy that listens to his headphones, 99% of the time when I'm running, listening to a podcast, listening to an audio book, listening to music, whatever the case might be for that day. And, very rarely do I use my runs as an opportunity to just be still and be quiet, or listen to the quiet, I guess. I'm not going to be still, obviously I'm running, but let my mind not be trying to take in information all the time. And I think that would be a good thing for me. So that's something I'm going to try to do. That's going to be something that I'm going to take away from this episode for sure, is the reminder that, it's okay to leave the headphones at home. You can take me with you for some of your runs, but don't be afraid to leave me home once in a while as well. And just go out there and enjoy again, just giving your mind a break. That's something I need to do. And, you might need to do that as well. But if you had a different takeaway from this episode, which would be easy enough to do, there's probably a half a dozen things that could very well be considered a takeaway. I would love to know what they are. So let me know, shoot me a tweet at DizRuns, shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com, or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/464, and leave a comment there, and you can check out the show notes. And there's links back to the previous episode, the best of episode, which you can still probably find in your phone, in the high 200s, I believe, if memory serves. And like I said, I don't have the notes right in front of me, but you can check that out. And you can also go back to the original post, which was well beyond what your podcast app will pick up at this point. But anyway, we are well past the hour point, so let's shut this thing down, shall we? Thank you guys for listening. Again, if you have questions about coaching, dizruns.com/coaching has all the information there. And you can obviously always ask me any questions, whatever it was unclear to you, ask, and I'll do my best to explain it to you, but not try to push you or force you or make you feel like you have to work with me. I'm just going to give you the information, and you can decide what works best for you. So if you need a coach, you're looking for a coach, thinking about a coach, let me know. And again, it'll be your decision, but I'll just give you the information if it's something that you're interested in. So that's it for today. Thanks for taking me with you guys. I know this is a little longer than normal, but hopefully you'll find that it was well worth it. I know it was a great chat that I enjoyed, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it as well. So take care of yourselves, and until next time, be well. We'll talk soon, guys. Take care.